Well, welcome back to another episode. And I am your host, Jennifer Wolanik, and I have here my co-host and resident expert, as I like to call him. He's like the science. I just bring the conversation. Okay. So that's where we're at with this, with the format. Yeah.
If it was science, we could just go with write it.
Yeah, we could just write
people
it.
People aren't here for science. By the way, we're not delivering you any much science at all in this episode. This is purely.
We'll do some numbers. We'll do some numbers. Yeah, this is not our typical format, but we certainly are going to be talking about something that is really fascinating. And I think we're all familiar with it in one way or the other. And that's the Westminster Dog Show. And I think most of us have either watched the movie Best in Show or watched the actual Westminster events. And I think it's always fascinating of like seeing the different breeds. But remember, these are the breeds that they bring up on stage and say, this is a representation of, again, Best in Show. They have showrunners, different levels for, for prizes. And we're going to kind of pair that with a concept that we've talked before on the show, and that's called body condition score. And so BCS for short. So we'll kind of refresh your memory, but we are going to do this in a matter of what does it mean to look at these images of dogs and walk through their body composition and comparing that to a leaner version of that. So yeah, Dan, let's kind of kick off.
Well, yeah. So Westminster, everybody that's listening knows, this is a big famous dog show, most famous dog show in the United States. And historically, obesity has been a problem among pets for decades at this point in the Western world. And one of the issues that no matter who your veterinarian is and what their perspective is on the cause of obesity and links to nutrition or what have you, they'll all tell you, well, people don't recognize obesity when they see it. They think their dog is the right body composition when really it's too fat. And it struck me, you know, years ago that like, you know, that same thing is really true in the show ring as well. And so we thought it would be interesting to compare dogs that have been winners at Westminster. So according to the most legit dog show confirmation show trial in the world, these are the best representations of the breeds. These are the best bodies. And look at whether or not these animals look the way the science says their bodies should look. Because they don't is the bottom line. And we'll kind of like walk through some specific examples, but we're kind of doing, it's not just like a hot or not, or like we're just purely judging. It's like, this is there is good, useful information here. If this all sounds Greek to you, I'd encourage you to stick around and listen to what we have to say about, like, just so you can understand better what's being said and what isn't being said at a dog show about the winners and the dogs that don't do well.
Yeah, absolutely. Exactly. We are not going to be showing photos of dogs and talking about photos of dogs with the intent of shaming anyone, including the dog. I know my dogs are very self-conscious about their weight sometimes, but
yeah, exactly.
We're not here to be like, these breeders should do better, the owner should do better. We are simply using a concept, which is, you know, from this like data concept of like ranking a dog based upon his body condition score. And we're going to walk through it and say, okay, based upon these characteristics, but it's certainly not being like, this dog is lesser than this dog, that's better than this dog. So no body shaming here.
Yeah, exactly. Episode. Like, this is not you know, if you were to do this, like we were saying before we started this, if you were to do the same exercise with recognizable people, it would be cruel. Everybody has a good, there's nothing informational that comes out of that exercise. And this isn't just like, we're trying to have a laugh at anybody's expense.
Yeah.
This is like, there are really useful little nuggets of information that you can use with your own dog through going through this. So
yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I was thinking,
not trying to be mean.
Yeah, we're not, this is not, exactly. We're not coming at it with like a vicious mindset or anything whatsoever. But I think it's this episode and other episodes, like, we're always putting on like the no BS glasses. Like, we're just right. simply trying to let you look through this new lens of just think about it from just like a pure analytic left brain perspective, and not being like, that dog is so cute, or look how his sheen is on his coat. Like, let's look at, you know, his body and what that means, you know, for health wise. So let's kind of kick it off. Let's get started in terms of
Yes, this is what
body
we need.
Condition score.
So this is this goes without saying. So we're going to be doing a lot of images on this one. So if you typically just listen to the podcast, you might want to download the slides that we're going to make available with the episode. Mm-hmm. But what would be even better if you can stomach looking at our ugly mugs for this entire episode is you should probably just catch the video and get the, check out this cool t-shirt that I got from my local folks, Normal Ice Cream Company. I go to this ice cream store so much, I get so much ice cream that they gave me this because I'm like legitimately the best customer.
They're like, forget the punch card, give this guy a t-shirt.
No, it's punch card. I filled up 3 punch cards. And so they're like, okay, here, you can have a t-shirt.
So, you've reached the platinum level. You get the golden ice cream scoop. So let's talk about if you eat too much ice cream or give your dog too much ice cream.
Very nice segue. What we have on the screen right now is are a couple examples of what are called body condition scoring charts. These are tools that are used to evaluate a dog's body composition, approximate a dog's body composition, how much fat is in the dog's body and how much of other tissues like muscle are in the dog's body. We've done other episodes. We've devoted the entire episode to breaking these things down and their significance. You can learn, if you want to go deep into them, you can go find one of those and listen to it. And there's plenty to be said. But here are kind of a few of the key take-home things. If you're looking at this right now, you can see what these are and how they work. And like, it's one of these things where it's like very easy to understand when you just look at it. So like even trying to give words to it, like describe it in words is like a little probably more confusing than it's going to be more confusing than helpful. But the thing to remember is this, the rule that emerges from your use of body composition scoring chart with dogs is really simple, really easy to remember, but not a matter of mainstream veterinary practice at this point. The rule that emerges is your dog should essentially be as lean as possible if you want to maximize its health span and lifespan. That's what the evidence says. The evidence says, essentially, think of body fat as like a low-grade poison, as emitting some low-grade poison. The more of it that's in the body, the more of that poison that's getting emitted from the tissue and is causing bad health things, the less of it that's in the body, the less of the bad stuff that's going on in there, is a good, helpful way to proxy to think about it. I say it's not a matter of mainstream veterinary practice, which is true. What the conventional wisdom regarding body condition scores in dogs is that essentially you should treat body condition like a U-shaped curve, that there's too skinny on one side and too fat on the other and just right in the middle. That is not backed up by the evidence. It's gotten to be a convention. In the United States, we have such a problem with overweight and obesity in dogs that for a lot of the world, this doesn't even matter. It's like if we got all of them to that low point on the curve, the like where the vet does say this is what's mm-hmm. optimal for your dog, evidence or not, it's a huge improvement because most of the dogs are too fat in the first place. So it's always a step in the right direction. But the reality for any dog, no matter what the breed is, that's an important thing that we'll get to later in this. No matter what the breed is, the best rule of thumb that you can use for keeping that dog as healthful as possible is to be as lean as possible, so long as two things that are really rare and really way out there on the too lean spectrum don't start happening. Number one, energy starts exhibiting less energy. You are literally starving the animal to a point where its body is shutting down and going into a I need to preserve energy mode is one. Number two, if it starts losing muscle mass. So there are different types of tissues in the body. Some of them are bad. Some of them are good. Muscle is good. Fat, generally speaking, is bad. And as your dog loses body fat, there's like a natural point at which muscle begins to be lost alongside at a greater degree than it is if you're just taking fat off an overweight animal. And if you get to that point, you have gone too far as well. But again, most of these things you're talking about, there are different body condition scoring charts. Some have like scores of 1 through 5, others like 1 through 9. Mm-hmm. You're talking about ones here, okay? Like what you think of, if you haven't thought about this issue before, I'm willing to bet you that what you're envisioning in your head as like, is this too lean or is this optimal? It's definitely not too lean, like quite lean. Think of like, you know, what's optimal is like an Olympic athlete. That is the kind of person who has the most healthful body in a human context. Like those are the people that are most likely to live a long time. That's what you're striving for here. The equivalent of abs and defined musculature is best for the dog.
Yeah. I think I often think of, like you said, in other countries, like those dogs that are roaming the street, they're homeless, they're very, very frail, they're very, very thin. And that outlier, 100%. I absolutely agree with you. So I think like when we kind of pairing this in a Venn diagram with Westminster, I think it's important that we're essentially trying to, in our minds, almost like correct these mistakes in calculation where they're saying, you know, optimal dog here, put it up on a stage.
Yeah.
But we'll go into imagery here in a second. But I think, you know, if there's anything that can be corrected, it's from that side of the judging table, right? It's not, you know, it's technically the breeders, but the judges are essentially keep setting this gold bar standard in these body types from a health perspective are not optimal. And when we
exactly
look at it,
so like here's how in a general sense dog shows like Westminster work is that the standard, like you can't judge something without a standard, otherwise there's what are you judging it against,
right?
And you're in the case of dog shows, you have lots of different breeds, so how do you compare one breed to another? You have to use some kind of narrative written standard which describes what each one of the dogs should look like. In the context of Westminster in the United States, these standards are created by organizations that represent each one of the breeds that are American Kennel Club recognized breeds. So there's a St. Bernard Club of America that represents, I'm a St. Bernard person, that represents that's responsible for creating and updating this standard for that breed. And the standard describes both temperamental things, but also physical outward traits that they should display. And both of those things ostensibly are being judged in the show ring. I don't know that, like, I think you're straining credibility pretty significantly if you're like, oh, these judges are judging the temperament of these animals and all, but the, you know, it's just very quick analysis. You can like digest a lot visually pretty quickly, but like, temperamentally is that's a little bit of a strain to me, but visual stuff, pretty straightforward. And so it'll say all kinds of visual stuff, right? Again, I'll just use St. Bernard's as an example. It'll say color stuff. It should have, I'm not looking at the standard right now, but like the brown and white and a muzzle that either has black half or one spotted eye, that kind of thing. It'll talk about the proportions, should how muscular should the animal appear to be. Some breeds develop bulk and musculature genetically, just like some people do, whereas other breeds don't develop that same amount of musculature naturally. So it'll highlight something like that. And it'll highlight size. So it'll say males should be 23 inches at the shoulder, something like that, 23 to 25 inches at the shoulder, and should weigh something like 80 to 90 pounds. And the reason, and so that's like kind of in a general sense, the type of information you'll find in a breed standard. And then the judges at Westminster are people who are ostensibly very familiar with all of the breed standards. So they can not only say, okay, among these eight St. Bernards, mm-hmm. this one is closest to what that standard says. They can say, okay, I've got a St. Bernard and a German Shepherd and a Yorkshire Terrier in front of me, and I can tell you which one of those three dogs is closest to its respective breed standard. Mm-hmm. There are two really important things to note when it comes to body composition and breed standards. Number one, not one of them includes a body composition, body condition score number. A lot of them, though not all of them, will say the dog should weigh this much or the dog should be this tall. None of them say St. Bernards should have a body composite or a BCS score of 2 out of 9, something mm-hmm. like that. Not a single one. Secondarily, nor does it say anything like, you know, even more granular and technical, like its body fat level should be 10%. It doesn't right. have anything mm-hmm. like that. Okay. So all of the like choices about leanness come through interpretation of the rest of the information that's in there in the standard, but it's not something that's directly addressed in any of them. Secondarily, there is a sense of like, there's difference between what is like, there are, how do I say this, man? This is like, I don't get tongue tied very often, but I do feel like I'm struggling to articulate that there's like a difference in what the body weight number on a breed standard implies about what kind, how fat is considered optimal in that animal. Is that what I'm trying to say? Like, for mm-hmm. instance, if the St. Bernard breed standard says that the animals should all weigh 80 pounds or less, what they're essentially saying is dogs that weigh very little, that they're very lean, should be winning in the show ring because given their height, that's like a
yeah. very,
and some breeds, you'll see this as we get into specific examples, they tend to reward fatter breeds than others. Like they tend to, despite the fact that none of the breed standards directly address this issue, there's implicit in some of how the standards are written, there's a reward for dogs that are, you know, if you're a fatter dog, you're more likely to come close to what is in the standard. And then the very, very last thing is this, is that none of these standards were written from the perspective of health. There is not a single breed club in the United States or anywhere else that basically said this. Look, we took 100 St. Bernards, took 1,000 St. Bernards, and we looked and we monitored all their body composition. And we see that the ones that weigh this much live the longest and the ones that weigh this much live the shortest. Therefore, we made the standard this way so to encourage people to help their dogs live as long as possible. That is not what the standards claim to be able to do. What they claim to be doing is describing the ideal of the breed, which is a human concept. Like basically like St. Bernards exist because we started calling all dogs that look and act a certain way St. Bernards.
Yeah.
And people came up with this breed standard that like, this serves the interests of the breed. Like whatever that means, that's what the standard is encapsulating. It is nobody's making the claim that if your dog looks exactly like the breed standard says it should look, that's optimal for its health. There is science that will tell you what kind of body is most helpful for a dog. And we covered it at the beginning of the show. It's the science that says the leaner, the better. It's not what these breeds, like there's not disagreement really between someone like between us and the St. Bernard Club of America over what weight a St. Bernard should be.
Right.
There's just the should is doing different work in those two cases. In our case, we're saying, well, the weight should be whatever's healthiest for the dog. And the people from the St. Bernard Club of America would say, no, no, no. What the dog's body weight should be is whatever best in the interests of the breed. And that's who wins at Westminster. And so that's why you start seeing like, oh, this dog clearly doesn't have a healthfully optimal body, but is still the best in show. That's why those two things can be different, if that makes sense.
It really reminds me, and we'll get into images in a second when you were talking. I was like, you know, the concept of the golden ratio of face, like people that are, quote, beautiful. And I'm talking humans for a second, but people that are, quote, beautiful have this like perfect portion of like your eyes are so much, you know, distant from your forehead. And then like your face is like this. So it has nothing to do with health. Versus someone, you know, who is healthy, like typically if they're unhealthy, maybe they have like a little swollenness in their face. Maybe there's indicators here. So so really these dogs are being judged on like this perfect golden ratio of like the size and the, you know, how wide apart their shoulders are and their markings. And, you know, so it's very interesting. I agree. It's like, there's no, here's the body fat percentage here. You know, like here's all these like other
if all the bulldogs that win at Westminster end up dying at 3 years old,
right?
Like there's nothing from Westminster's perspective that's inconsistent there. That's like an absurdity in our eyes because it's like, how could you say that's what it should be if it's dying at 3 years old? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But they would say, well, we're not judging that. We're judging does it conform? And like, I'll give you some more like human examples. It's like, if you have a really big child and he is going to grow up and play in the NFL, he's going to be a lineman in the NFL. Well, the optimal body for that dude is going to be north of 300 pounds.
Yeah.
Because the job they need to perform in the context of the NFL is to stop other huge people from getting through them and getting to the quarterback, right? There is no health case to be made for somebody to be 350 pounds, 25% body fat, no matter how strong it makes you, you will, that person's chronic disease risk, numerically speaking, is way higher than a very lean, smaller person. It just is. That's a fact that's been established, but it's still the should, if you're coming from the NFL's perspective, you know, if you're coming from the quarterback's perspective, I want somebody that's bigger.
That's
going to do a better job. And so that's kind of the tension that allows this episode to exist.
I love it. Let's look at some examples, or let's talk through visually, but certainly, like you said, we're absolutely going to link any and all visuals that we'll talk about. But I think it's good to like, let's talk about the creme de la creme, right? Like this was chosen best in show, right? So that he's won out all showrunners, you know, spoken for by all the judges of match, like you said, all these criteria categories. And Bloodhound, the first Bloodhound, I guess, that is won best in show. I don't follow it that religiously, kind of like such a beautiful breed.
They're so good. I think they just like fit my sense of what a dog should be. I love how dopey they kind of seem, even if they're not. I think of this, our Saints as kind of being like bloodhounds for some reason.
Oh my gosh.
But I mean, absolutely. we got images of him pulled up right here. And this is apparently the best looking dog in the country right now. It's the most recent winner, best in show of the biggest dog show in the country. And I'm telling you right now that this dog, you can see it from the profile image here. This is not an on the fence. I think this dog, it should be leaner, but a vet might say it's optimal. This is unquestionably considerably overweight. Unquestionably. The things you would look for to indicate the very simple stuff that you do to evaluate whether the animal's too, like the very clearest indicators are all here. You know, you can see the most notable one is what we call an abdominal tuck. When you look at the dog from the side, when you look at it in profiles, you can see both a front leg and a back leg. You should see towards the rear of the animal, the abdomen should, there should be an upward sloping line, like where the way that the rib cage dangles down. Exactly. Yeah, exactly. There you go. Now we're pulling the body condition scoring charts back up.
Yeah.
I mean, like, take a look at the chart on the left. This dog's body is like the nine. Like this is not all that close. This is like an eight or a nine. Like this dog is way, way overweight.
Yeah.
Over fat.
Yeah.
And correct. I mean, there are breed specific issues here in that, like, clearly the bloodhound is a breed that carries a lot of loose skin.
Loose skin.
And it's easy to be like, wait a second, is that a ton of fat tissue? Mm-hmm. And it's not all right. It's like they're easy to mistake for one another. But if you focus just on some of the things that are clearer indications, can I see muscle tone? Can I see rib cage? Can I see an abdominal tuck? Can I see points of the hip? Those are things that are, regardless of whether your dog has got loose skin or not, you're going to be able to notice. And in this case, you got plenty of skin, but you also have, unfortunately, plenty of fat. I don't know how old Trumpet is, but yeah, dog is overweight for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. So then we'll move from best in show. Like you said, these are all, every image that we have chosen, the from Westminster has either been like a showrunner or like chosen even to like the level above. But yeah, Trumpet's like the best in show. Like you said, that's a best overall. So certainly all these other ones, but they're still of the breed category. They have been chosen to be the best of the breed category. So next up is Bulldog.
Bulldog is like such a common one. You know, like I was saying before, there are, I don't know that there, there actually might be some people who have tried to put together some peer-reviewed science on what breeds tend to be overweight more often than others. Now, I don't have that off the top of my head, but I will tell you that like Bulldogs are very commonly considerably overweight. They're definitely one of those breeds where what's implied in the standard is an animal that has to be, based on its proportions, carrying a lot of fat in order to make its way into the like the weight range that's specified. And I mean, you can see it again. You got like, this is, you have the case of some loose skin, but I mean, the dog, the English Bulldog representative here in Westminster is clearly, I mean, like you could see that we've got pulled up right here, the Westminster winner from the Bulldog breed against an English Bulldog that's on a veterinary table that we pulled off the website for a veterinary clinic where they're making this exact same point where the vet is saying, basically, this is what a Bulldog should look like because body composition has a huge impact on health span and lifespan. And you see it too often with Bulldogs that they're too fat. And you can see everything from the abdomen. I mean, you look at the abdomen in these two dogs and it's just like, whoa, night and day. It's almost like you can see the spine like being, it's like drooping down.
You can almost the weight looking at the Westminster, like just that, like, I'm not sure like the human equivalent of what that would be, like, you know, 50 extra pounds or whatever that is. But yeah, the spine, it just feels so heavy. Like that must be painful at some level, but.
Yeah, and you can, astounding. And you don't see it with the other. The lean one is like, that spine is like, that is a sound looking structure. That back is horizontal and the animal is in balance. But it's like, if you were to, you could really easily, I bet you, if you ask Bulldog owners, you ask, just pulled 100 Bulldog owners, which one of these is like healthiest and which one is, I think you'd get tons of answers of people being like, oh, that lean dog is sickly. Something is wrong with that dog. One is what a healthy, vibrant bulldog ought to look like.
And the lean bulldog, again, we'll make sure you have links to all of these visuals because it is astounding when you compare the two. But again, we pulled it from a veterinary clinic website and he made that exact same point. He's like, I literally have to tell people this bulldog is not sick. This bulldog is not too lean. Like this is a very optimal weight for him because it's just not, I was telling Dan right before we recorded, I've seen many bulldogs in my life. I have never seen that lean of a bulldog ever.
And I was telling you that like with the bulldog, like that you, this dog had, my ex, basically my partner that I was married to, was she had a bulldog and we lived together. Lucy became our dog for a period of about 8 years.
Sure.
And Lucy lived to be 13 years old, mind you, which is incredible. It was double the average lifespan of a bulldog. But like she had, this looks exactly like what her silhouette, like body outline would look like. It's like in a bulldog, it's really pronounced here because usually you're so used to seeing the head look comparably, it's like a wide, thick head, but the rest of the animal is so wide and thick that you get kind of like a certain like intuitive sense of what the ratio ought to look like, what's normal for a bulldog. Mm-hmm. And this lean one, you can see that ratio doesn't hold. Yeah. Like the rest of the body is too narrow compared to the head of what you're used to seeing. And it just strikes you immediately as like, oh, this something is different here. And this is exactly how Lucy appeared. And I mean, it's just what it's just an anecdote, but she lived to be 13 years old.
And I think it's also important that bulldogs can be bred and trained to be very muscular and wide, but that is a different thing of what we're saying here. Like when you look at the Westminster bulldog example, again, that width is coming from extra fat. It's not like it's not bulging muscles every, you know, it's not being trained in a specific way to get that size. It's just large. Extra weight.
Like you should be able, this is a, not all dogs have really short coats. So I've got two Saints. One is a rough coated Saint, which is to say he has like a thick coat. So it's hard to see what's going on the surface of the animal. Whereas the other one is smooth coated and he's like this bulldog or like a pit bull or something where you could see the muscle tone. If they have a lean body composition, you can see the outlines of musculature, just like when you think of like a person with six pack abs like that. It's not, you don't just see the abdomen. You can see the muscle tone itself. And that's something you can see. If a dog has an optimal body composition and doesn't have a long coat, you should be able to see all that stuff. And that's obviously all you can see on this dog is like, you can see rolls of fat in places. Yeah. And that's kind of the only like kind of like definition. It's gross.
And I have to admit, like there's still a part of the emotional part of my brain that kind of goes to, but like he's so cute. Like
he is cute.
Those little, like look at those little rolls. So it's just one of those things, like that's why this the way that we frame things is so important, because we're just literally going by like, here's the definition of a healthy dog's body. And that's seeing ribs, that's seeing, you know, like all these things, because I tend to go to like, but he's so cute. Like, well, he's so chunky, but
it's, and that's fine. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, this is not a, I don't know, like saying that if that's more valuable to you, it's you. I mean, on the one hand, like, I guess some people would disagree and be like, no, you have an obligation to this dog to keep it as healthy as possible. That is how I feel. I would like my dog to be around as long as possible. But it's like, I'm not somebody that goes to the dog park and is like, hey, you're doing something wrong here with your dog. It's like, never talk about that.
Yeah. Subject. Oh, yeah. I mean, right. And Dan was never invited back to the dog park. So let's go to another example, Mastiffs. Now, these are huge dogs. Yep. So obviously bigger than a bulldog, but you can kind of see the same issues here.
Yeah, you can. This is a really good set of photos. You did a really nice job finding these. I mean, you could see, look at, for the winner at Westminster, look at the rolls of fat on the neck. Like you could see there's a part of where it's holding its head up. There's, you know, kind of like one of the classic poses that they put the animal into to evaluate them in these kind of shows is this, with its head up.
Yep,
exactly. Mm-hmm. And because its head is up, the neck is like angled in such a way that it's just like all these fat rolls stack up over the shoulders. And you can see in a dog that is holding the exact same pose but has less body fat, just doesn't have them. Yeah. It's just not there. And I mean, you're talking about, I mean, you know, ballparky, you're talking about this dog probably having something like 2.5-3 times as much fat in its body as the leaner one. That's a huge difference. You know, you're talking about a BCS score for the lean pet of maybe 3. And you're talking about one for the winner of best in show, probably like 7 or 8. Again, there's like very little abdominal tuck. You can see it's a distended abdomen. It's like a barrel shaped abdomen. It's not something where it tucks up. You can see it all throughout both of the big leg muscles, the lean pet on the right side. You could see the like upper leg muscles on the rear that like you could see where one ends and another one begins. You can't see it in the Westminster winner. He's just
I agree. Most noticeable around the neck, like you have, and it's not just like extra skin, like that's literal fat deposits around its neck. Its head, like it's like got like a little, you know, gullet kind of coming down as well. And again, I don't know the age difference between the two, so there might be that consideration, but even the leaner one, you can see the definition of like the muscles around its hind legs into the tail. Like that is very, very defined. But yeah.
And there's just a, you know, it's hard to know the extent to which this type of thinking gets into a judge at Westminster. I guess they probably would argue that it doesn't very much. But when it comes to giant breeds, like these Old English Mastiffs or like my St. Bernards, people are quick to conflate fatness with like largeness. You know what I mean? Like, it's more common to get away with just like a fat dog because it's just like, they're huge. They're huge, and huge means big in every possible way.
A linebacker example of like, well, it's a big breed. It should be like big.
Yeah, exactly.
Well,
yeah. And it's like, these dogs can get just as lean as a more svelte or more like a less muscular breed, a less tall breed can. But it's more common to see them super huge. I don't know if it's just like, I think for some folks, there's this kind of pride element. I get it sometimes where it's like, people are like, oh, when they're just astounded by how big your dog is and are asking you questions about it. Oh my God, your dogs are so big. How much do they weigh? And I'm like, oh, they weigh, you know, 130 pounds. Like, wow. You know, it's, but like, I don't know. It's not important enough for me to compromise how long these guys are going to be around to just make him like a, well, they're large and large is how they're supposed to be.
I agree. Yeah. And speaking of svelte, let's talk about the other end of the spectrum.
Ah, yes.
Let's talk about the greyhound.
Yep. So like, this is one where the breed standard clearly includes a sense that the animal is supposed to be lean, right?
Yes.
So remember your time before about NFL football players and how from the perspective of the NFL, optimal for alignment is to be super big, even if it means super fat in addition to super muscular and strong. Well, on the other side of the human spectrum, when it comes to running, there's a huge motivation to be really lean because running involves moving the entire body. Having moving a body that weighs 10 pounds more requires more effort than and more, you know, energy expenditure than moving one that weighs 10 pounds less. And so inevitably your world-class runners are very lean, very small, light people. The same thing applies to racing in other species, right? Like all that power and energy dynamics is the same and if it's a dog or a person. And so when you have dogs that are competing to be as fast as possible, they end up getting lean, right? And like, and light and littler. And so greyhounds, it's like part, because of racing is such a natural, it's a part of the history of the breed. It's baked into the breed standard that these dogs come from racing and therefore should have a body that is in at least some way still optimized for that historical heritage. And so the standard includes the notion that the animal is lean. And so your winner of the greyhound breed at Westminster does look lean. You can see the stomach tuck on this breed looks completely different than it does on the mastiff or on the bulldog, where you can actually see the upslope from the bottom of the rib cage up to the waist. You could see the definition at the waist, right? Like that, you could see kind of the way that the musculature at the top of the hips bulges over just like the taut skin in front of the back legs. And so it's like, it's important to note that that might be in the judge's eye more optimal on a greyhound than it is on a mastiff. But from the perspective of health and science, it's the same in both cases. It doesn't like, it's not healthier on a greyhound than it is on a mastiff. It's the same in both cases. It's like saying like this person can have a beer belly, but this person, it's healthier for him to have a normal six pack. I don't know, something like that.
And not to mention genetics play such a huge role with certain breeds, like great, and especially with Westminster dogs, are I would say show dogs in general, they're breeding the same, you know, typically the same dog. Just like in horses, they're like, oh, this has a heritage or lineage. They're kind of breeding these dogs over and over to have that same body structure. But I'm sure, you know, greyhounds for many years have been racing, athletic, geared focus. So it's like, it has to have some kind of genetic, like no matter what you feed dog. No matter what you feed this dog, like it's going to, it would take a very extended effort to get it to gain a significant amount of weight versus, you know, other dogs might need more exercise. But yeah, I agree that. So it's important to note that a downhill tuck, showing of the ribs and showing more muscle tone is important across all breeds. All breeds, no matter what, the leaner, the better is what we're trying to say here. So this is, and you can just see here, we also put a racing actual greyhound, like in the ring running around. And it, I would say the most noticeable difference is just more like bulky up here in the arms, because again, it's using certain muscles over and over.
Yeah.
So it's got a little bit of,
it's but they're more similar than a lot than like the ones that we found.
The other ones. Otherwise. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. So it's end of the.
So it's like, it's not, it used to be, I used to kind of think that it was just like, if you win on in the show ring, you're too fat. And I think that I've developed a more nuanced perspective on it. That's like, I think that is definitely the case with some breeds, but not with all of them, because some breeds, part of the expectation, if you're a judge that's just very familiar with the standards, is that kind of breed is one of the ones that's supposed to be really svelte. And the reality is just like, that's not what the evidence says. The evidence doesn't say that some breeds should be lean and others shouldn't be. The evidence says they should all be really lean.
So. Yeah, I agree. So, well, maybe you should start your own dog show of like the healthiest dog in America.
Yeah. I mean, I thought about it from I think if I knew how to do social media, I would be trying to do that. I think that's a great contest. World's fittest dog, trying to submit. Why should we consider there are actually groups that I wrote about, one of them when I was writing my book, that it's like a canine body. It's like just like these Facebook groups where people come around the idea that their dog, they deal with similar trials and tribulations, people whose dogs are very lean. And it's just like people belly aching about like, I bring my dog to the dog park and all these people are like, oh, are you starving your dog? Oh, what you're doing is so horrible for the dog. And it's so frustrating because they just don't know. And there's like, enough people experiencing that they have to get together in a Facebook group. But I agree with you. It would be nice if there was a competition that was just about, that considered, an evidence-based standard of optimal instead of a kind of subjective, historically optimal, whatever that means.
So we'll see. I guess maybe stay tuned for Dan's GoFundMe to start his own TV show for World's Fittest Dog.
Yeah.
Well, good. Well, I hope you enjoyed this different concept, but still the same components that we typically do here on the podcast. And if you have any suggestions for other the similar style of topics, always feel free to reach out to us at hello@feedyourdogfacts.com. We're always open to suggestions, or if you have any more questions about the body condition scores that we went over, anything like that, we are more than welcome to, or we're more than happy to do a part two too. So we'll see where this goes. All right. Well, thank you for listening, and until next time.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.